Here's the case of the Syrophoenician woman, and I want to just walk through a couple of these structure steps. In Matthew 15, it's 21 through 28 is where the story is. And the context, as it turns out, is actually pretty important, namely that Jesus has just confronted the Pharisees with a discussion over ritual defilement. And they've had this conversation about, what is it that defiles a man? Is it what you take in or what it comes out? And so he really is harshly putting down the Pharisaic, adding on to the law all these stipulations about cleanliness that distance themselves from the heart of the law, which is God's love. Then following the narrative, on the other end of it is the feeding of the 4,000. A narrative directed both to the pagan woman in this pagan setting, which we'll see in a minute, and to the disciples. And so basically we find the story of the Syrophoenician woman in the framework of Jesus' very substantial, combative engagement with the religious establishment. So with that context in view, why don't we go ahead and read the thing, and then we'll break it down into the scenes and just kind of show how the structure orients itself to what the main point is and how it's supported. So we begin in verse 21. Jesus went away from there and withdrew to the district of Tyre and Sidon. And a Canaanite woman from the region came out and began to cry out, saying, "Have mercy on me, Lord, Son of David. My daughter is cruelly demon-possessed." But he did not answer her a word, and his disciples came and implored him, saying, "Send her away, because she keeps shouting at us." But he answered, and he said to them, "I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." But she came, verse 25, and began to bow down before him, saying, "Lord, help me." And he answered and he said, "It is not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs." But she said, "Yes, Lord, but even the dogs feed on the crumbs which fall from their master's table." Then Jesus said to her, "O woman, your faith is great. It shall be done for you as you wish." And her daughter was healed at once. And so here, this is an interesting story. I think it breaks down pretty easily into three scenes based upon the people that Jesus is addressing. The first being the woman. This is verses 21 and 22. And what do we pick up here? Who is this woman? Who is she? She's a Canaanite woman. She is in the region of Tyre and Sidon. Where is that? That's not in Israel, is it? That's north. So he's gone outside of the borders of Israel into pagan territory. So who is it? It's a Canaanite woman. Canaanites. Really unclean group. Woman in the presence of a rabbi? Really? Outside of the domain of Israel. And when does this happen? What does it tell us? Read carefully. And the answer is, it doesn't. Okay. That's all right. We just know that it happens after they went and withdrew into the district of Tyre and Sidon. We don't know exactly when it was. We don't know what day of the week it was. But what we want to note here, just in the interaction between the woman and Jesus, is that, see, Jesus leaves Israel after engaging Jerusalem's religious elite over the nature of ritual cleanliness. And he retreats to this pagan land. And the Canaanite woman, unlike either the disciples or the religious authorities, this woman recognizes Jesus' true identity as the son of David. Isn't that interesting? Son of David, she says in verse 22. And if you look at Matthew 9:27 and 12:23, the other references to Jesus as son of David, there's something ironic, namely, which is that in all cases, they come from unclean lips. Now, why is that ironic? Why is that significant? A Canaanite woman in a pagan country recognizes that Jesus is the son of David. Only people who are unclean, in fact, in Matthew's gospel, have recognized Jesus as the son of David. What does it tell us? It's one of these reversals that you see all over the gospel. The people who should get it don't. The people who shouldn't get it do. The people who you think are blessed are cursed. The people that you think are cursed are blessed. All of this completely unexpected thing going on, and it is absolutely a direct confrontation with the religious establishment. They are guilty. The proof of their guilt is that even this woman, who is as unclean can be, unlike them, recognizes Jesus' own true identity. So that's a remarkable place for this narrative to begin. And then the second piece then is when Jesus then begins to interact with the disciples in verses 23 and 24, which will set up the action that Jesus actually performs. Jesus is silent with this woman. He does not reply to her directly, but he does reply to his disciples' desire to send this woman away, and his response is significant. He says, "I was sent only to the lost sheep of Israel." Okay, I am the Messiah of the Jewish people. Well, okay, what is the significance of that statement? Well, for one, it fits on one level the description of Messiah as it's given to us in the Old Testament, namely that God's Messiah is the Messiah to the Jewish people. So in that sense, it's true. But clearly, Jesus is playing to his disciples' belief, which was common among all the Jewish people of this day, that the Messiah is uniquely the possession of the Jewish people. And so I was sent only to the lost sheep of Israel. Is that really true? Is that what Jesus really thinks? Or is he parroting their view? Which would it be, and how would you know? Well, you would know based upon the action of the next scene, right? What does he do? And so this interaction really brings the disciples to this place of thinking, oh, who is this guy Jesus? What does it mean that he is the son of David? And so the third scene kind of resolves the thing as he interacts with this woman, which is such a remarkable exchange. Think about this. Here he is. It's not good, Jesus says, to throw the children's bread to the dogs, the Gentiles, the goyim, referred to as dogs. So he's telling this woman what? That you're a dog? Is that what he literally means? No. It's a figure of speech. Again, this is Jesus using rabbinical communication. He's creating a picture for her. She knows that this is exactly how Jewish religious people feel about Canaanite people and Canaanite women in particular. They even called them dogs. But Jesus is not meaning this in that same condescending and literal sense. Instead, what he's trying to do is evoke something from her where she then, and she, because she takes the bait. She said, "Yes, Lord." She doesn't say, "Oh, I resent that," Because why? Because she's desperate for one thing, and for another, she knows that he's not being deliberately offensive. Yes, Lord, but even dogs feed on the crumbs which fall on their master's table. What is she doing here? She's not disagreeing with him. She's just saying, I don't deserve, but I want to be included. See that? I don't deserve. I'll take that. I am not a member of the family around the table. I'm a Canaanite. I get that, and I accept it. But I still want to appeal to you, son of David, king of Israel, the Messiah, to participate in those blessings. And, you know, of course, we've been reading the Old Testament long enough to know how Jesus would respond to this, don't we? We know that the blessings of the Messiah when he comes are going to be global in their reach. And so, of course, Jesus is going to be able to respond to this woman. But he does it in a way that draws her faith out. Not looking at Jesus as a Coke machine to push the button and get what she wants, but to appeal to him. And so that's what happens, and Jesus responds seeing that faith and grants her request. So those are the three scenes that make up the story. And in terms of the structure then, the context is a challenge preceding this to the internal rather than external meaning of cleanliness. Then there are three points made in each of the scenes that make up the story. The first is based on irony. It's the identification of the unclean woman that Jesus is the son of David. And that just challenges this superiority that are driving the religious. The second is Jesus' point that the Messiah's mission centers on the lost of Israel. And the third point from the third scene is that the woman is basically pleading theologically for inclusion in the blessings of God to Israel. So the main point then comes at the end when Jesus himself pulls it together, where God honors the greatness of this woman's faith, both her persistence and the content of her faith, that she offers herself as a strong antithesis to the rabbi's tradition-based religion centering on purity and defilement. So by understanding the context, and we see that here's a counterpoint in Jesus' argument against the religious, that all of the features of this story speak clearly to what he's already told them about this whole issue of cleanliness. So in laying out structure, then you just want to identify, okay, what's this story coming to? What's the climactic point? What's the resolution to the tension or whatever? What is the main point? And then how do each of the scenes then kind of support or illustrate what that main point is? And it will be, I think, pretty easy as we get into these things for us to see the structure of it. Let's take a look at the preceding narrative in Matthew 15, verses 1 to 20. This is the one that sets this up. And I'll just briefly walk us through that. It says in verse 1, then some Pharisees and scribes came to Jesus from Jerusalem and said, why do your disciples break the tradition of the elders? For they did not wash their hands when they ate bread. And Jesus answered and said to them, well, why do you yourselves transgress the commandment of God for the sake of your tradition? So you have tradition against the behavior of the disciples. And God said, honor your father and your mother. He who speaks evil of father or mother is to be put to death. Wow, radical. But you say, whoever says to his father or mother, whatever I have that would help you has been given to God, so-called Korban, he is not to honor his father or mother. And by this, you invalidate the word of God for the sake of your own tradition, you hypocrites. Rightly did Isaiah prophesy against you in Isaiah 29. This people honors me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. But in vain do they worship me, teaching as doctrines the precepts of men. And after that, Jesus called the crowd to him, and he said, "Hear and understand. It is not what enters into the mouth that defiles the man, but what proceeds out of the mouth. This is what defiles the man." Then the disciples came to him and said, "Do you know that the Pharisees were offended when they heard this statement?" Duh. But Jesus answered and he said, "Every plant which my heavenly Father did not plant will be uprooted. Let them alone, for they are blind guides of the blind, and if the blind man guides a blind man, both will fall into the pit." So Jesus is the conciliatory diplomat that he is. Okay, so that's a cool interaction. And again, the context, significant, the preceding narrative piece is Jesus walking on the water and Peter's faith in him, and because of his unique authority. The one that follows is the one we just looked at, the Syrophoenician woman, who is unclean but clean inside, unlike these Pharisees. She, in other words, is living out verse 11. It is not what enters into the mouth that defiles a man, but what proceeds out of the mouth. That's what defiles him. So the teaching is really broken down into who is Jesus talking to. And the first section, he's talking to the Pharisees and scribes. That's verse 1 through verse 9. Then in verses 10 and 11, he's talking to the crowd. And in verses 12 to 14, he's talking to his disciples. You see how that is? So in that way, the whole thing breaks down fairly easily. And we can just see that here's the structure of this narrative piece. Now, in terms of the main and supporting points, again, I think that this thing is pretty easily broken down. There's an introductory statement, which is verse 2, and it's a question. The Pharisees ask, "Why do your disciples violate the traditions by eating with ritually unwashed hands?" Okay, so that's a question. I mean, they just can't believe Jesus is letting them, you know, eat without washing their hands in the ritual way and so forth. Then each of the three scenes are three audiences and three responses to that question, with a very deliberate conclusion being given after he interacts with Peter in verses 15 to 19, where he says, "These are the things which defile the man, but to eat with unwashed hands does not defile the man." So that is a direct answer to a specific question. Do you see that? So the whole narrative is just structured around question, boom, scene 1, boom, scene 2, boom, scene 3, and conclusion at the end. And so the first scene, in addressing the Pharisees, Jesus points out that their tradition, here's why it doesn't matter that they wash their hands according to tradition, it's because the tradition itself violates the law. And the example that he gave was this business of taking money that should be given to your parents to care for them in their old age, to honor thy father and thy mother, and dedicating it to the temple, which basically means that you can't use it for any other purpose except your own, and your parents are not entitled to that money. And so as a result, they're using this loophole to live selfishly and not care for their own parents. And that's not in the Old Testament law. That's just their own tradition. And Jesus says, your tradition directly contradicts the teaching of the law. And so the advocates of tradition, therefore, are simply hypocrites involved in the vain worship that Isaiah 29, verse 13 told us about. So that is the in-your-face smackdown to the religious establishment. Then when he addresses the multitudes, he's just very clear. Defilement is the result of what comes out of a person, not what goes into him. In other words, the whole ceremonial thing really doesn't matter at all. And then third, as he's now talking to his disciples who are kind of reeling in this conversation, knowing that he's just really ticked off some important people, Jesus responds with the parable of the uprooted plant and the blind guides. The Pharisees believed themselves to be guides to the blind, and they're teaching the guide to the perplexed. And Jesus is just putting that right in their face and saying, you know, it's the blind leading the blind. Bad news. And the conclusion then that it's the heart, not unwashed hands, that defile the man.